Hey, Healthcare Experience Matters listeners. We have a very exciting episode for you on tap today. I am joined by Katie Owens, the Healthcare Experience Foundation president, and Jim Kinsey, who is a first-time guest on our show. He is a national expert in person-centered care, diversity, equity, and inclusion, particularly in belonging and strategies leaders can implement for employee and team engagement. I want to turn the microphones over to both Jim and Katie and have them tell us a little bit more about themselves, and we will jump in today's discussion on belonging.
Thanks, Casey. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be back and rejoin our listeners and to be here with Jim today, who I know everybody is just going to absolutely feel your passion, Jim, and commitment to this body of work. And I absolutely love that we met through both of our dear friend, Dorothy Cisneros, who's just so special to also many of us in healthcare. As Casey mentioned, I'm the co-founder and president of Healthcare Experience Foundation and have the joy of working with our clients every single day, our coaching team based all across the country to advance experience outcomes and to make sure that every person is worthy of an environment where they can both deliver and receive that best, excellent, high quality experience.
Katie, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and your listeners about things that I'm very passionate about. Just to give everybody a little bit of background, I have a 30-year history career in healthcare, both as a bedside nurse and as management and leadership. I've spent the last 18 years consulting to create environments of person-centered care, both in long-term care and acute care, from small, tiny, rural critical access hospitals to large urban city systems. I've spent implementation time in all of those aspects.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we've been really intentional, Casey and Jim, to plan our conversation today, one of the things that just struck me in just the best way is your lifelong commitment, your professional, your personal commitment to belonging, which is something that we've emphasized considerably over, you know, the last 7 years, 7 to 8 years of Healthcare Experience Foundation's existence. So I know, Jim, as we prepared for our conversation today, you've shared with me what I think would be amazing for our listeners to learn more about, which are the three core aspects of belonging. I think it feels like such an important topic. We can see it when we feel it. We also can see it when we don't feel it. So can you elaborate on some of those more tangible points of belonging?
Sure can. I'd be happy to. And I'm going to connect these points also to factors that facilitate belonging. So the conversation surrounds the idea of psychological safety. And psychological safety is something that many of us are familiar with. It's where I feel respected, where I feel trusted, where I feel as if my voice can be heard and my input valued. That is essential, but there are some conversations that only focus on that. And to truly engage in an inclusive environment, in an inclusive culture, there are two other aspects. The first one is psychological meaningfulness. So do I find value in my work? Does my work attach to my personal value system? Does my work fulfill me emotionally and spiritually? The third aspect then is psychological availability. Does my organization realize that I am a person outside of here? And that I may have things that are impacting personally, but also professionally? And how does my organization help me balance those so that I can then be available, if you will, for the work that we do together? In absence of availability, I don't feel that sense of belonging because my whole self is not put into my work or the organization now. Current research is really starting to show in regard to employee engagement that post-COVID, it's the essence of feeling like I belong, but also finding meaning in my work. And there's a lot of discussion around burnout and around resiliency, and all of those discussions are important. But what some of the literature is starting to show, and some of what my work with direct healthcare staff has been really in uncovering, the idea of moral injury versus burnout. And moral injury, it really focuses on that psychological meaningfulness. So if what I'm doing doesn't fulfill me or doesn't allow me to stay connected to my purpose, then I start questioning the impact that the work has on my values, the impact that the work has on my integrity, the impact that that work has on my character. And that's really the essence of moral injury. And one of the things that I've been working with organizations around is really, let's just call it what it is. Let's not say it's burnout or severe burnout. It may be, but for many folks at this point, it really is about moral injury. And I just want to connect psychological safety, meaningfulness, and availability then to the factors that go into creating that an inclusive culture. And there's three of those as well. The first is having a compelling direction. And this attaches directly to psychological meaningfulness. A compelling direction think of it as a mission statement, think of it as a vision statement, but it is co-designed by those that are working together in teams. And that is our true north, if you will. This is what we're trying to achieve. This is what we want to do. And all of our values can be seen in that statement. The second attaches to psychological availability, and that's the factor of team insight. How do we know each other? How do we support each other? How do we listen to and take on the experience of other individuals so that we can truly connect, so that we're able to really be in relationship and can truly create the culture that we're looking for? This is important for organizations to realize that we need to prioritize relationships. We need to prioritize relationships within the team. We can't just assume that people are going to organically come together and form a team. And then the last one is a supportive context. And this attaches to psychological safety. And a supportive context is really where I have the safe space to freely express myself, where I understand that not only myself, but other members of my team are working with positive intent and leading with positive intent, and that I don't have to fear retribution about what it is my thoughts are or what it is I may be challenging the team with or encouraging the team to do.
I think what I value so much is breaking those into threes. And I think as you've shared, I can just think of so many instances where working with our partner healthcare organizations or attendees at our programs have seen and lived the safety consequence of this. And, you know, when I don't feel free speaking up, when I don't feel that sense of being able to contribute in a risk-free way, ultimately, at the end of the day, the individual who bears the consequence of that is the patient and their loved ones.
Absolutely. Because I can't, an old mentor of mine, I'm sure it's a famous quote from someone, but I can't give you what I'm not getting. So if as an employee, I don't feel included, I don't feel that sense of belonging or respect, how do I give that to a patient and their family then? Because I can't give you what I don't have. A lot of that comes from the fact that through receiving it, I learn how to give it. And if I'm not receiving it, then that learning doesn't take place.
Absolutely. I was just a part of a patient round where that power dynamic was so strong that that patient also lost their voice. And so we really worked on some strategies with a lot of what you've described. And so I think brilliantly articulated that we've got to help others find their voice, find their opportunity to contribute.
Absolutely, Katie. And I think that that whole process of helping someone find their voice is really improved when I know my voice is valued. So in your example, there's a high potential that the individuals working closely with the patient didn't feel like they could lift up, that we weren't engaging the patient. And that's where you start to see that domino effect of things falling down.
I want to pose a question, I'll put it out there for both of you. Why do you think leaders might be hesitant to prioritize belonging, within their teams or organizations?
So Casey, I believe, and I've heard from many healthcare executives, it's hard work creating cultures of inclusion. And what I mean by hard work, because we all work hard in healthcare, so I'm not minimizing that, but hard work in terms of creating a culture of inclusion really means for some, I'm unfamiliar with how to do it. I'm uncomfortable sometimes having the critical conversations that need to be had when we see, behaviors that are non-inclusive. Also, how do I prioritize that in addition to everything else that I have going on? And who can I count on my team of leaders that can really take this and do something with it? And I think that that's why, we've seen the increase in leadership positions for individuals that do solely focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion, because that person can then hold on to it without the competing, as many competing priorities as a leader. And I think also we have to recognize that we're in a space in healthcare where we keep saying X is a leadership responsibility. This is important for leaders to do that. This is important for leaders to take care of their team. But we also have to come back and say, who's taking care of leaders? So if I'm on a leadership team and I don't feel that sense of belonging or that sense of inclusion, how am I ever going to give it to someone else? But in addition to that, continuing to use phrases like that's leadership's responsibility, or what I always hear is they should be doing this and they should be doing that. We have to realize that the landscape of healthcare has changed drastically. It was already changing pre-pandemic, but post-pandemic, it has really changed. And I had a leader in Maryland with me in a discussion group, and she said, my frustration is that we're trying to solve new problems, trying to resolve new problems with old tools, but we don't have time to learn new tools for the new problems. And so the group then went on to discuss how frustrating it is to try to support staff and try to support each other in a new environment and no one has the toolbox. And I think that, Casey, that's why some are apprehensive to start.
Just last week at the Barrel Institute conference, we were working on the civility and belonging. And to your point, what we were exactly, building towards is that old playbook does not apply. Like, you can't take the playbook from 5 years ago and try to play whack-a-mole with it. And that's what we see is what you've described, is that this can feel really big and where does it fit? And I think I know you're going to share some examples in a moment here. This really becomes the mechanism with which all other key indicators can be supported and stood up, is when you have this climate and it becomes tangible, competency built and layered and reinforced. It's a lever to drive all outcomes in a way that we absolutely need to explore and commit to, because we can't just have that checklist mentality of the last decade.
Exactly. And I kind of equate that also to, and I know for yourself and many of your listeners, you may recall this time period, but about 8 to 10 years ago, all of the talk around patient and person-centered care was get it in the strategic plan, get it in the strategic plan. Because if it's there and we're looking at key performance indicators related to it, now it's meaningful. Now it's just, you know, now everybody's involved. And I feel the same way about creating a culture of inclusion, what I call it inclusion and appreciation. But how do we get that into the strategic plan so we can have key performance indicators for that, so that it is part then of the guide for the organization, that it's not just something we do when we have time. It's something that we've attached to our metrics. It's something that we've attached to our performance. And that begins to then embed it more in the organization.
I want to talk about some strategies and tactics here that leaders who may be listening can implement to foster that sense of belonging among their employees that I think we're all striving for.
So there are specific tactics around creating the inclusive environment, things that include creating a team charter, creating the rules of engagement for the team, understanding how all of that attaches to our mission and vision. But a lot of it is also around what do we hear and what do we observe. And so when trying to create a culture of inclusion, or at the very least, assessing our current culture, we need to look for things like people that go out of their way to make someone feel welcomed when they're new. Do we have team members that are making the extra effort to understand what each other's position is, what each other's experience is? Do we have conflict resolution that is effective and efficient without kind of pulling the team apart? Is there a willingness to help, or do we still see some of that, you didn't help me last Tuesday, so I can't help you today? Do we have team members that are approaching each other with positive intent, or is it a critical environment where we are just constantly in defensive and attack mode? And is there a willingness to help each other? Is there a willingness to stand up for each other? And so those are things to look for currently to assess your culture, but they can also become aspirational goals or performance indicators moving forward. Some of the things that you want to discourage as a leader are things such as the expectation that people have to behave or look a certain way when they're part of this group. Are we withholding information from some, giving information to others, which creates a division of that division of transparency? Are we belittling someone's ideas? Are we talking over people? You know, one of my favorite things to do when I begin working with organizations is I go and I sit in meetings, because you learn so much about the culture of the environment just by watching meetings. You see things such as who's talking the most, who's talking the least. Do we say, oh, I haven't heard from you yet, Casey, what are your thoughts? Or do we just let people sit there quietly? Is there, one of my favorite things to watch is there a meeting after the meeting? Right. So everybody's here, everybody's agrees technically, but then there's some of us that are going to stay behind and really then dig into to what we want. It's also things that include who cleans up after a meeting. You know, is it, and this may sound unusual, but are we expecting, so we have a meeting that includes food, and then are we expecting that environmental services cleans it up, or does it default to the women on the team to clean up? Because that really talks about how people view each other and how people value each other. You know, you can look at it from a gender bias perspective, but you can also look at it from, do we just leave it for environmental services, which is really connecting it to, do we truly believe every role is noble? Or do we just think that individuals are going to do what they have to do and that's their job and we go with that? But I think also the concept of code switching is that I'm not able to fully be my authentic self in this room. And whether that is I change my language, I change my hair, I change my clothing, my personality. But what happens is it separates us from our authentic self. And when I'm separated from my authentic self, I can start to experience imposter syndrome, such as, do I really need to belong here? Do I belong here? Am I needed here? Am I wanted here? Am I respected here? And so, you know, all of these subtle behaviors that we really should be discouraging and avoiding have such a huge impact. I go back to a couple of years ago when I was working with a team in Oklahoma, and you know, the CEO said, you've been here for 4 days. You've attended more meetings than I have. He said, I don't understand how that's helping. And so I kind of took him through what was basically a high level overview of my visit and just pointed out everything that myself and my team had learned while we were there. And it really resonated with him because he kind of was questioning why we wanted to do this many days of observations, but because that you need that an amount of time to see how people are interacting, to see what the current culture is. And so that authenticity is vital to inclusion. And the question that I always ask people is, would your friends outside of work, would they recognize you if they listened to you at work or saw you at work?
That's a great question.
Yeah. And Katie, the number of times that gives people pause.
Give me pause. I get it. Like, yeah, that's a powerful question. And something I'm hearing from you, Jim, is the safety. Not only can I speak up, but can others speak up as an ally on behalf of others? So we need to have both. And we want to have that congruency in our bringing our authentic selves to work, you know, clearly within the parameters of our institutional values and clinical guidelines and all of that, that are just so important to the safest, highest quality care. I know that you have said that this just absolutely doesn't happen overnight. And so for our listeners, do you have any final thoughts on our conversation and some take-home points for others who want to build their inclusivity, for others who might be struggling and not in that safe space? What are some parting wisdoms you would share for the day?
I think what's most important is that you identify what your current culture is. And that can be a challenge, especially if people aren't feeling safe enough to really tell you what my experience is. And so oftentimes, you know, there are third-party ways of gathering an understanding of what your current culture is. And that is sometimes very meaningful because if you have a third party involved, the staff, the patients, everyone views them as a true neutral party. And so you can get more information from that. The other thing that's real important is to take the time to truly understand what inclusion is. Because There are some folks that when I begin working with them, they say, well, we ask everybody their opinion. And then we make the decision. I'm like, that's not really inclusion. That's asking for feedback after I already know what I'm going to do.
Masked feedback.
Exactly. And it's also focusing on creating those opportunities around meaningfulness and availability. I think leaders tend to focus on psychological safety. I don't want to diminish it by saying it's easy to do, but it's much clearer, right? Transparency, trust, honesty. That's just clearer. We've got tools for those. Don't necessarily have tools to sit with somebody and take the time to understand why they do the work that they do and why currently they don't feel like they're able to accomplish that. And we still are, for some, we still have the perception that your life outside of here, where we're working, stays as a time clock when you come in. That's impossible to do. I think anyone that has worked in any type of organization, healthcare or not, you bring everything with you. And to have someone request you not to bring that with you is really, really difficult to achieve. And if I'm making that request, then I'm already not including your whole self into the organization because I'm asking you to leave part of it behind. And psychological availability does not mean that we have to become counselors or therapists for our staff, but we have to be aware of what is impacting them and how we may be able to help or how we may be able to refer them to other organizations that can help. I worked with a hospital last year in Rhode Island, and they actually created a position that they are funding currently through a grant. But the position is a full-time individual that is there, and they are solely for the staff. So if you think about what our patient advocates do or our patient experience folks do, it's this person's job, but for staff. And so I believe that they are going to see really good results from this. But there's also large systems like New York City Health and Hospitals who have this amazing program called Helping Healers Heal. That has really been nationally recognized for the power that it has. And all of that's attached to meaningfulness and availability. So I think that those are some of the things that you can look to starting to implement. But I'm always cautious of saying different types of programs and those things, because if you don't really understand what your culture is, then you're just throwing things out there and hoping that something works. If I give you an example of something that happened. So space for staff to decompress, right? That's very big right now in organizations, particularly hospitals. And we want a place where our staff can go to not be immersed in the stress or not be immersed in all of that activity, just a place to breathe. Many organizations have designed and created beautiful spaces that are nowhere near the work area. So when I work with organizations, I have a leadership team saying, well, we built that for them and nobody uses it. But then I work with the staff and they say, well, they built that for us, but it takes me 10 minutes to get there. I only have a 15-minute break if I get that, and so I can't get there. And so, again, using that as an example of how it could have been so different through inclusion, Mm-hmm. By asking, what do you need? By asking, where would it be best placed? By being intentional and telling managers, you need to relieve people so that they can go decompress, so that they can go and be quiet with themselves for a few minutes. But at the same time, then, it's also looking at what do we need to do for managers so that they're able to do that. You know, one of my experiences personally was I became a nurse leader in long-term care, and I was very, very excited about doing this because A, I love long-term care. B, I saw all sorts of things that I was going to be able to do with my team, only to find out out of a 40-hour week, 30 hours were spent in meetings. And so I never really even had time to be with my team, to create inclusion or to create appreciation. I had time to say, here's the new directive, here's a staff meeting, here's an insert, but not that inclusive development time. And that can be that. So we have to help managers find that time.
Yeah.
So what I've heard you describe is honestly the environment that every team member wants to work in and the environment that we want our loved ones to receive care. So thank you, Jim.
Definitely going to have you back on the show again. Just so many different things came out of this conversation, Jim. I want to thank you so much for your time today. And Katie Owens as well, Healthcare Experience Foundation President. And Jim Kinsey, who is a national expert in person-centered care. He's also a diversity, equity, and inclusion speaker, and particularly when we're talking about belonging and strategies that leaders can implement for employee and team engagement. This has been a very special episode, and I thank you both for your time.
Thank you for having me, Casey.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Healthcare Experience Matters. Healthcare Experience Matters is brought to you by the Healthcare Experience Foundation. To learn more, please visit healthcareexperience.org. That's healthcareexperience.org.